All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let's begin. Our shir this morning is dedicated by the Elman and Rubin families, Le'ilui Nishmas. Chi Leonard Rubin Gershon Lippa Ben Leib Azriel on the occasion of his 23rd yard site. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, and Hashem will have an aliyah and the family in Nechama. Thank you for the sponsorship. Shkoyach. Okay, so let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Lamed Ches. We are starting from the two dots on Kuf Lamed Ches, 138, two dots, six lines down from the top. The Kamen Oseinu. And I will say, again, remember, thank you to Yehuda for giving the shiur yesterday. So we are, the Gemara now is commenting on the part of the Mishnah that actually speaks about as follows. Remember, the conversation begins in the Mishnah with how much wool, the weight of the wool, that has to be given to the Kohen. But the part actually that the Gemara is focusing on over here is a discussion that says as follows. Meluban velot soi, that you have to give the Kohen whitened wool and not dirty wool. So the Gemara now picks up on that and says, Tana, lo she'il abnenu. It doesn't literally mean that I have to whiten the wool before going ahead and giving it to the Kohen. Lo she'il abnenu v'yitnenu lo, ela she'il abnenu Kohen v'yamot al chamish slam. Rather, what it means is that I have to give the Kohen enough wool that if when the Kohen goes ahead and whitens it, that there'll be at least the weight of 5 slaim of wool. So also it's a very important idea. So meaning, it's an understanding that when you give the Kohen wool, say unwhitened or uncombed wool, there's impurities that are mixed in. Those impurities ultimately add to the weight. So I am not obligated on my own to go ahead and whiten the wool to the Kohen, but I must go ahead and give the Kohen enough wool so that when he ultimately whitens it and removes the impurity, that there will be 5 slaim weight of wool. Kadei lasos beged katan. So remember again, after the Mishnah then gives me a weight measurement, the Mishnah says, how do you know if it's enough? It's enough wool to make from it a small garment. So the Gemara says, mehani mili. From where do I know that this is the measurement ultimately for Reishis HaGeiz? Amnei v'shul ben Levi Amar Kra, la'amod l'sharis. Because the Pasuk says that the Kohen will stand to serve. The Pasuk says, Ki bo b'char Hashem elokech mikol shvatecha, la'amod l'sharis b'shem Hashem hu uvanav kal yom. So remember again, this is after the mitzvah of Reishis HaGeiz, after the Torah speaks out the obligation to go ahead and give the first shearings to the Kohen. So the way the Pasuk phrases it is that the Kohen will be able to stand and to serve before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's the nature of the juxtaposition between the obligation to give the first shearings and this statement that the Kohen should be able to stand and to serve? So we learn from, Bishop and Levi says, we learn from this, Dover Shu'i Ra'i L'Sherus, that I have to go ahead and give the Kohen enough first shearings from which he can fashion something that is worn in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's something that is usable to be worn in the service of Hashem? Mainihu, avnet. It refers to the belt of the Kohen. The Kohen wears a belt in avnet. So therefore, there has to be enough wool to be, Reishis HaGeiz, there has to be enough wool, ultimately, to be able to make for it from the avnet. I am a meal. I know it's the avnet. Now, I will say, out of all the big day kuhuna, right now we assume that's the smallest of the big day kuhuna. So how do you know it's the avnet? Maybe it's something more substantive, like the mi'il, right? The mi'il, remember, is like the cloak, robe, thank you. The robe that the Kohen wears. So the Gemara says, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. If you try to grab onto too much, you grab onto nothing at all. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is as follows. Remember, we're dashing over here the juxtaposition. So the juxtaposition between the obligation of Reishis HaGeiz and the statement La'amod L'Sharis, which I'm learning that there has to be enough Reishis HaGeiz to fashion something for the Kohen that can be worn at the time he serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet the Torah does not define for me which beged. When in doubt, ultimately again we say Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta, Tafasta Muat Tafasta. That ultimately, if you try to grab too much, you grab nothing at all. Try to grab a little, you could be confident that you could hold on to it. I'm sorry? An incredible Musar, although not always true. I would say sometimes in life, this is one of these concepts that you have to know when to apply and when to discard. There are times in life where you have to try to grab onto a lot. try to grab onto a lot. If you notice, by the way, tafasta meruba lo tafasta is very often employed when interacting with other individuals. So over here, when the Torah Kedosha is trying to claim something from the Yisrael to the Kohen, so we say tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta mua tafasta. We'll say it's an incredible idea. When you are ultimately forging your expectations of other people, expect very little. Expect very little. Never expect too much from others. From others, it's the best way to live life. Don't expect people to come through big for you. Expect people in general in life to underperform. It's not a chisaron in people. It's a way of creating important expectations for yourself. So when it comes to others, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Tafasta mua tafasta. So over here, remember, this is the Kohen, right? This is the Kohen. The Kohen is going to get reishis hageiz. Kohen, don't expect a me'il. Expect an avnet. When it comes to yourself, Rabosan, when it comes to your own right, what you expect from yourself, we never say tafasta rulo tafasta, tafasta mua tafasta. No, no, no. When it comes to your expectations of yourself, always expect the maruba. Never expect the muat. It comes to others, expect the muat. Comes to yourself, expect the maruba. It's mefurosh, says the Gemara as follows. So the ima kippah shel tzemer. Maybe this applies to the kippah shel tzemer. Now, it's actually very interesting. Rashi says over here, kippah kova katan. This refers to the small hat that the Kohen wears. Now, both say, now, interestingly enough, what this seems to really be referring to is actually a small piece of fabric that accompanied the tzitz. That accompanied, remember again, the Kohen Gadol would wear this tzitz, would wear this this forehead plate that said Kodesh LaHashem, and the Kippah Rashi says over there is Kippah Kova Katan, the Santa Oso Batzitz, I will see. Ve'ema Kippah Shel Tzemer, Desanyo, Kippah Shel Tzemer Hayo Munachas Berosh Kohen Gadol. It was a small, what literally means woolen cap, that was worn on the head of the Kohen Gadol, Va'aleha Tzitz Noson. And the tzitz was placed on top of this. Now, this doesn't literally mean the tzitz was placed on top of this because the tzitz had to be worn actually on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, but rather it means somewhere around the tzitz. L'kai ma'ashenemar, v'samta oso al psil tcheles. You shall place it ultimately on a psil tcheles. So maybe, again, there has to be enough. Maybe the shear of Reishis Hagez is enough to go ahead and make this small woolen kippah, right? This small woolen hat, really, kippah means a hat, but it means this small woolen garment that was made as an accompaniment to the tzitz, to which the Gemara says, no. Amar kra, hu ubanov. We'll say, the Pasuk says, he and his sons, davar hashave la'aron ulabanov. Ultimately, it means something that was worn by both Aaron and his sons. Now remember, again, the tzitz was only worn by the Kohen Gadol. As such, the little kippah, the little woolen garment that was an accompaniment on the head of the Kohen Gadol for the tzitz, was only for the Kohen Gadol, and therefore, again, it can't be that this is the shear for Reishis Hagez. I avnet nami lo. But one second, if that's the case, avnet nami lo shavi. But one second, the belt of the Kohen Gadol was also different than the belt of a Kohen Hedyot. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi, actually, not yet, I'm sorry. Honey chalaman damar. So we'll say, see now, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the avnates, remember again, what did we just say before? We said before that ultimately the shear of Reishis Hagez is the weight of 5 sloim. Why 5 sloim? Because that's the basic weight that is necessary, basic weight of wool that's necessary to make a small garment for the Kohen. What's a small garment for the Kohen? So the Gemara says the avnate, the belt. The belt of the coin for the big day kuna. So remember, let's just follow the progression. I, maybe it refers to the me'il. No. Tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Maybe it refers to the kippah katan, the small woolen garment that was worn on the head as an accompaniment to the tzitz. No, because the pasuk speaks about that is something who one of, something that both Aaron and his sons wear. Since only the Kohen Gadol wears this kippah katan, and not ultimately, again, one of the other Kohanim, it can't be that. Maybe it refers to, To which the Gemara says, well, now that you're telling me that halacha lemaisa, the garment that is the measurement for the Reishis Hagez has to be something that is worn by Aaron and his sons. So at the end of the day, the Kohen Gadol and a regular Kohen wear a different kind of avnit. They don't wear the same kind of belt. Oh, the Gemara says, now you just opened up a whole machlokas. So hani chalaman da'amar, avnito shel Kohen Gadol, lo zehu avneto shel Kohen Hedyot. They're both saying, now listen to this. This makes sense according to the opinion who says that the linen avnet, the linen belt, worn by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was not the regular belt of the Kohen Hedyot. Then I will say ultimately Shapir. Look at Rashi. Remember again on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol wears plain linen clothing. Plain linen clothing. So according to the opinion who says that the belt of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, which was made of pure linen, lo zehu avneto shel kohen hedyot, that was not the same as the belt of the Kohen Hedyot throughout the year. Again, Rashi, shakal hashana, deha hu havi shel kilayim, kedichsiv, ve'es ha'avnet sheish mashezar tchilas, v'chi ksiv avnet kilayim be'im mekohen gadol, be'im mekohen hedyot, shakal hashana ksiv, Shapir, just one more Rashi, meshkacha shavin aron obanam ba'avnet shel tzemer, kigon shel shayim oshan, also listen to this. So according to the opinion, it's very exciting, according to the opinion who says, you know why it's so exciting to read a Gemara of Yom Kippur, Now, again, on the week before Pesach, let's go back to Shabbos HaGadol, Joshua. What do we just speak about? That there's this power of tshuva both on Pesach and on Yamim Noro and Mamish. Here we're singing in the daf. Yom Kippur, week before Pesach, all together. So see, now watch this. Everyone agrees on the following concept, which is, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol wore a plain linen belt. In accompaniment with all his other clothes. Why does everybody agree with that? Says it in the Torah, right? That's an easy one, right? Because says it in the Torah. That pretty much you can't disagree with. Now, I will say, now, what's the machlokes is, what did the Kohen Hedyot wear throughout the rest of the year? So, according to this first opinion, the Kohen Gadol wore a linen belt on Yom Kippur, but during the year, the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot wore the same belt. What was the belt? It was a kilayim, it's actually shatnez. It was made of a mixture of wool and linen. So according to the opinion that says that the belt of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur was not the same as the belt of the Kohen Hedyot during the year, because during the year, both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot both wore a belt that was made of wool and linen, then I will say this Gemara makes sense. Then I could say, what's the shear for Reishis Hagez? What's the shear for the first shearing? What's the shear? Enough wool to make what? A belt. Why a belt? Because that's something that's shava, that was the same for Aaron and his sons throughout the year. Not on Yom Kippur, but throughout the year. Eleman Damar, very exciting, Zeo Abnito Shakoin Hedyot. Oh, but I'm about to listen to this. But according to the opinion who says that the belt of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was in fact the belt of the Kohen Hedyot throughout the year, now we have a problem. What's the problem? My ikalemi arabos. So listen to this. The problem is, if you say that the belt of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur, which was made of linen, was the same as the belt of the Kohen Hedyot during the year, which means that according to this opinion, the Kohen Hedyot wore a linen belt throughout the year. The Kohen Gadol wore a shatnez belt throughout the year. Then why would the sheer voracious hagez be enough wool to make the belt when that would not be something that was shoveh for Aaron and his sons throughout? You're supposed to hear the shayla. You just got finished telling me, you just discounted that the wool cannot be the measurement for the kippah katan. Right? Why? Because there's only something the Kohen Gadol wore, the Kohen Hedyot didn't wear. In other words, that the sheer voracious hagez, the sheer for first shearings, is for a small garment that was worn by both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot. That makes sense if you tell me that during the year, the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedyot wore the same kind of belt, a belt that was made of wool and linen. But if you tell me that during the year, the Kohen Hedyot wore a linen belt, and it was only a Kohen Gadol who wore the wool and linen belt, then why would the sheer for Reishis Hagez be a belt when that was not Shavah for Aaron and his sons? Supposed to hear this? Why am I getting so many blank expressions? What is this? Is it like sugar shock from the Ragamach? Say, guy, you got to hold in this. I'm doing all the heavy lifting. All you need to do is follow along. Come on. So as I say, you understand this fundamental. First of all, I said it's just fascinating because, again, understand. Let's just work through this for just a moment. Okay, I'm clearly not explaining this well enough. So again, here's what we go. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is wearing a belt that is made of linen. That everyone agrees with. The machlokes is what's happening the rest of the year. So we have two schools of thought. First school of thought is that during the year, Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedyot wear the same belt, same avnet, both made of wool and linen. Second school of thought is that during the year, interestingly enough, the Kohen Hedyot wears the same type of belt that the Kohen Gadol wears on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Hedyot wears a plain linen belt, and the Kohen Gadol wears a wool and linen belt, a shatnez belt. And we'll say, why is this important for our conversations now? Because remember again, our Mishnah tells us that halacha lemaisa, there has to be the shear for Reishis Hageiz is 5 slime. Where do you, what's the meaning of 5? What's the meaning of the weight of 5 slime? That's enough to make a small garment for the Kohen. What small garment are we referring to? So remember again, the Gemara says, the belt. The belt. Why the belt? Because it has to be something, it has to be a garment that is shave for Aaron and his sons. To which the Gemara says, okay, that only works well if you tell me that Aaron and his sons wore the same belt throughout the year. But if you hold that Aaron and his sons did not wear the same belt throughout the year, because his sons, quote unquote, which means regular Kohen, we're wearing what kind of belt? A belt of linen. Versus Aaron, who was wearing a belt of Kohen Gadol, of wool and linen, then they weren't wearing the same belt. If they weren't wearing the same belt, so we're back to the same question about the Kippah Katan. To which the Gemara says, Michael Amimar, Shem Avnet Ba'olam. So we'll say to which the Gemara gives a very simple answer. At the end of the day, they're both called belts. Right, meaning the fact that no matter what they were made of, that's fine. Meaning the garment is the same. The garment is the same. I will say, as opposed to, for example, the kippah katan, where that garment was only worn by the Kohen Gadol, that garment was never worn by the Kohen Hedyot. A belt is a belt is a belt. So we could have a machlokes ultimately again about what the belt was made of, but in terms of defining the sheer ferocious hageis, we are going to define it as the amount of wool necessary to make one of the Kohanic garments that was worn by both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot. What was one of the garments worn by both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot? The Avnet, the belt. It could very well be that during the year they wore different kinds of belts. That's not really material to our conversation right now. So again, let's just close the circle. So why did you say the Mi'il? The Mi'il was also something worn by the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Hedyot, which the Gemara answers. Tafasta merubalo tafasta, right? So therefore we're going to look essentially for the smallest garment worn both by the Kohen Gadol, Kohen Hedyot, the same type of garment, which was the Avnet. Therefore, again, the Shef Horeshes Hageiz is enough wool to be able to make the Avnet for the Kohen. Beautiful. Lo hispik litno. Suppose Gemara goes by this. Remember, this goes back now to the last cases in the Mishnah, which deal with these series of cases. This is lo hispik litno lo achet sevao pater. Right? So ultimately, this is talking about the case where if I did not go ahead and give the Reishis Hageiz to the Kohen until I dyed it. Remember again, I'm supposed to give the Kohen undyed wool. If I dyed it, then technically speaking, it's potter. Right? Libno velo tzvach, I velo. So the Mose, actually, the Gemara is going to comment on the latter parts of the Mishnah, the last part of the Mishnah, which are cases where I am purchasing wool shearings or sheep, depending on the case. We're going to go through all of this. From an Akum, from a non-Jew, what's my obligation ultimately in Reishis Hageiz? Here we go. Itmar, Gozaz Umacha Rishon Rishon. So we'll say, if you're looking at Goz Vitzionim, changes this too, because I know say Umacha Rishon Rishon. So let's listen to this case. Let's say I'm shearing my sheep. I shear and sell. Shear and sell. Shear and sell. 5 times. Remember again, the Mishnah establishes that the shear for Reishis Hageiz is 5 sheep. Therefore, in a simple case, I have 5 sheep, I shear them, I become chayv in Reishis Hageiz. This case is a bit different. What did I do over here? I went ahead and I sheared and I sold. I sheared and I sold. So therefore, I will say, at no point in time did I own the 5 shearing, did I own the 5 sheep that I was shearing all together. As I sheared them, right, I sold them. So the Gemara says, Itmar Gazaz Umacha Rishona Rishona, Rav Chista Amar Chayif. Rav Chista says, I'm still Chayif for Reishis Hageiz. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia Amar Pater. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says that I am Pater. What's the Pshat? Rav Nosson Bar Oshia Amar Pater. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says I'm Pater. Why? Ba'idna de Kamali Shura Ba'inan Son Chavaleka. See, Rav Nosson, interestingly enough, at the time that I have enough shearings, right, to cross the threshold to obligate me in Reishis Hageiz, I must own the sheep as well. In other words, it's not enough just to own the shearings, I have to own the sheep. So the problem over here is that what? By the time I get to sheep number 5, I no longer own the sheep. Because remember again, I'm shearing and selling. So therefore, by the time I get to the threshold of Reishis Hageiz, I no longer own the sheep. If I no longer own the sheep, then I'm not having Reishis Hageiz. So the Gemara says, So Tanan, Halokeach gaze sono shalvid kocham. So what's the memory again? What do we learn in the Mishnah? If a person purchases the shearings from an akum, pater me reishes hagez. I am pater ultimately from reishes hagez. Hot sono ligzos chayiv. But ultimately, again, I'll say, look at Rashi. Hatsono ligzos. Shemacha lo guf hatson zekana lo haguf achikas. We'll also listen to this case. It's actually fascinating. So the Gemara is making an interesting deal over here. If I purchased shearings from an akum, I am not chayiv in reishes hagez in that case. What we infer from this is as follows. If I purchased the sheep from the Akum, Rabbi said, well, I want to point out what's happening over here. In this case over here, the Akum sold me the sheep, but he sold me the sheep in order to shear it. In other words, I'm going to give him back the sheep after I shear it, but at the time that I'm shearing the sheep, I actually own the goof of the sheep as well. Hatsonot ligzos chayiv. But I will say, if the Akum were to go ahead and sell me the actual sheep, so that I own the actual heftza of the sheep while I'm shearing it, I would be chayv in reishis hagez. Why is that? Amai. Kol chad v'chad basa giza nafkale mirshusei. But one second. How does that work? As soon as I shear it, what happens? The tzon goes immediately back to the akum. Take a look at Rashi. Kol chad v'chad, Rashi, by the way, on this staff goes into the left hand. It's on both sides. So it's on the, I'm sorry, it's on the left hand column. Kol chad v'chad basar giza nafak mirshusei. V'katoni chayiv. Alma basar shas giza. So I say, what do you see from here? You see from here that sheep ownership as defined is when? At the time of the actual shearing. See, if I will say, if sheep ownership is defined at the time of the actual shearing, technically speaking, even if I'm shearing and selling, after I shear and sell that fifth sheep, what should happen? That should trigger for me the chiyav of reishis hagez. In other words, I don't have to own the sheep indefinitely. I just have to own them at the time of shearing. Kigon shehiknon lo kol shloshim yom. I will say, what's that case ultimately again of where I'm chayiv? That's where the akum sold it to me for 30 days. In other words, I will say, if I'm going to shear and sell, in fact, again, the halacha is I'm not chayiv in reishis hagez. But if I'm going to own the sheep for some amount of time after the shearing, that's when there will be an obligation of reishis hagez. So the case of Rabbi says where the akum sold me the sheep, and he sold me the sheep for 30 days. Therefore, Rabbi says, what happens over here? I shear the sheep, and for some time after the shearing, I own the sheep as well. That'll be a case where ultimately, again, it will be chayv and reishis hagez. Look at Rashi. Kol shloshim yom. Rashi just points out, by the way, lav dafka, 30 days doesn't have to dafka mean 30 days. Ella, shihu kol agufim kinuyim lo, atashlum kol agizim. Rather, I will say what it means is as follows. That aloha lamaisa, I must own all of the sheep until all of the shearing is done. So Bosa, what comes out is as follows. Halacha lemaisa, in order to trigger the obligation of reishis hagez, remember, we're adding detail after detail. There has to be five sheep, at least according to one opinion in the Mishnah, and I must own all five of those sheep until when? Until the last of those shearings is done. So halacha lemaisa, again, it's not just enough that I accumulate a certain amount of wool, I must actively own all of the sheep until the end of the last shearing. What is that based on? Tzoncha. Because the Bible said the Torah is placing two kind of metrics for this obligation. Number one, a certain volume of, a certain weight of wool. And number two, a certain an ownership of the sheep. Therefore, if I shear and sell, shear and sell, shear and sell, even though, again, I end up with the proper weight of wool, which should trigger the obligation of reishis hagez, if I don't have sheep ownership, by the time I'm shearing the last of those sheep, there, in fact, will be no obligation. Beautiful. Halokeach geiz tzono shel chavero. So also remember, again, the last part of the Mishnah was an interesting idea, which was that if I'm going ahead and purchasing sheep from my friend, so what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that if I'm purchasing sheep, but not the whole flock. So who has the obligation of reishis hagez? The seller. If on the other hand, I'm purchasing the flock in its entirety, then what? Then halacha lemaisa, I, the purchaser, have the obligation of reishis hagez. So says the Gemara, here we go. Man tana deheicha deika shiura gabi mocher baser mocher azlinan. So we'll say essentially what comes out is as follows. A very simple idea. If I purchase the flock in its entirety, then the obligation of reishis hagez is upon me. If I leave behind some sheep, then halacha lamaisa, the obligation of reishis hageiz is upon the seller. Says the Gemara, who is the opinion who holds that where there is a shiurik abi mocher, when I leave something behind with the seller, so basra mocher aslinan, then we place the obligation ultimately of reishis hageiz on the seller. I'm going to chista Rabbi Yehudahi. But I say this is Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda say? This not. Interesting case. Hamochel kilche ilan besoch sadehu. No sin peya lechol echad vi echad. So we'll say, if ultimately, again, I sell, listen to this case, a person sells, kilche ilan means tree shoots. Right? The klach is a shoot. I'll tell you what this case means in just a moment. So we'll say, actually, look at Rashi. Kilche ilan. Very interesting case. Ilanos atzman lakach impero seyen. Lahachi nakat lasham kilche. Shein sadezu sade elon, ela sade lover. Both listen to this case. I have a wheat field. The case of it is, I have a field of wheat. Now, amazing enough, what happens in this field of wheat? Some fruit trees pop up. Right? Now, again, this is not a fruit, this is not an orchard. Right? This is a wheat field. And in the middle of this wheat field, some part of this wheat field, some trees pop up in the wheat field that go ahead and sprout fruit. Shein sadezu sade ilan, ela sade lavan. Begadla bashnayim o shlosha ilan osumachran. So we'll say, what happens in the middle of this field? A couple of fruit trees pop up. And what happens? I sell the fruit trees. Now watch this. Hamocher kilche ilan besoch sadeu. No sin peya lechol echad v'echad. So we'll say, the halach is, the purchaser, whoever purchases these fruit trees, has to leave peya for each of these trees. Now look at Rashi. No sin, lo keach peya mekol ilan v'ilan kidichsiv, lo sefair acharecha, ve'in echad mehen polter as chavero, hoyol ve'in hasade shalo, shim hais hasade shalo hayer nasun me'echad akulam. So let's listen to this. So a couple of halachos. First of all, there is peya by trees also. And we're used to peya meaning what? What is? How do we colloquially understand peya? You leave a corner of your field. Peya by trees means that after you harvest that tree, if you leave stuff behind, right, if you inadvertently left stuff behind, you leave it there. You leave it on the tree. So the halacha is that you have to leave peya on each of those trees. And each of those trees has a distinct peya obligation. Not only that, but even if the owner of the field left peya on the field, the peya of the field does not exempt those trees from peya. Why not? Why not? Because simply enough, those trees are reckoned as their own independent entity. Why are they reckoned as their own independent entity? Because this is not a fruit tree field. This is a grain tree field. Therefore, those trees are not exempted by the pay on the rest of the field. And those trees are not even reckoned as a unit. Rather, each of them are looked at on their own. And therefore, there has to be payah from each of those trees independently. Good. Simple. Straightforward. I'm going to be doing Masai. When is that tree? When is that true? Bizman shelo shir bala soda. That's only if the owner of the field did not withhold any of the trees for himself. In other words, that the owner of the wheat field sold all of the trees. Aval shir bala soda. But we'll say, watch this. But aloch lemaisa, if the owner of the field retained some of the trees, even one of the trees for himself, then what? No sin peya al hakol. Then I will say, when the owner of the field leaves peya on the field, that peya on the field does what? Does what? Takes care of everything. Look at Rashi. Aval shir echad liatzmo. Once the owner of the field withholds one of the trees for himself, then what I will say? Then halacha lemaisa ramya kula chiyuva alei. The peya for the entire field now becomes incumbent upon him. Vinosin peya bekarka bizraim la'aniyim. Suppose it's amazing. If the owner of the field holds one of the trees for himself, then what? Then the obligation of pay. Then first of all, the entire field is looked at as one entity, and the obligation for payah must be done by the owner of the field. And when he separates out that corner of payah, real what we think of as payah, that takes care of the field in its entirety. What do you see from here? Amo heicha di ikashira kulach yuvar ramya alei di lav alei ramya. So we'll say, what do you see from this? You see from this that halacha lemaisa, when the owner of the merchandise withholds something for himself, the obligations devolve upon the owner and not upon the purchaser. So for example, I will say, just to illustrate this case for you, I own the field, the wheat field. Amazing. Fruit trees pop up in the middle of my wheat field. So two case possibilities. If I sell off the trees, I'm divesting myself of any owner. I totally sell off the trees. Who is the obligation of pay incumbent upon for the trees? The purchaser. The purchaser. If, however, I go ahead and keep one of those trees, even just one of those trees for myself, then what Rabbah was saying, then Allah Khalamaisa, those trees are considered to be part of my field. If they're part of my field, then what? The obligation of payah upon the field in its entirety, wheat and trees, devolves upon who? The owner of the field. We'll call the seller. And therefore, even if someone else purchases two of those trees, Allah Khalamaisa, that person does not have the obligation of payah. The obligation of payah devolves upon me, the owner of the field. So what do you see from here? A very important halachic principle. That when the seller retains some ownership interest in that which he is selling, right, or in the min of which he is selling, the obligation for matonos remain upon him. Therefore, halacha lamaisa, transferring, or I should say, so applying this tereshis hageis, if I am a seller of sheep, a sheep seller, then what Rabbi say? Then halacha lamaisa, if I sell the whole flock, then who does the obligation of tereshis hageis apply to? The buyer. But if I retain some of the sheep for myself, then what? The obligation of Reishis Hageiz applies to who? The seller. Right? The owner. Good. Says the Gemara. Says the Gemara. I must have heard. So no say Pakulakhava. Amrli Rabba. Vahamar Hudu Amar Bahusha Ischil. Bala Sada Liktar. But one second again, Abby, you said before, that's only true. Right? That's only true if Halacha Lamaisa, before the seller sold the trees, he began to harvest the very trees himself. In other words, if he actively began to harvest the trees, then Allah said that's demonstrative of his ownership over those trees, and that's why he's chayiv in payah. But if he did not yet begin to harvest the trees, that would not be the case. Look at Rashi. So you said, Rabbi, that it's only if what? It's only if Allah, the owner of the trees, begins to harvest them before the sale. Because once you begin to harvest, that's when the obligation of payah really kicks in. So that's only if actively again the owner of the field began to harvest the fruit trees. That's when the chiyuv of payah kicks in, and that's when even if afterwards he sells some of those trees, he, the owner of the field, will be chayiv in payah. So the Gemara says the chitay mahachinami husheis chalik ligzos. So maybe it's the same thing over here. That maybe again when the owner of the flock, even if he sells his sheep, it is the owner who will remain obligated for Reishis Hageiz when? Only when he actively began to shear the sheep. So Bishlam Ahasam Ubikutzrichem Eskitzir Aretzchem Ksiv. Here's the difference. By Peir, I will say the Pasuk says, when you will harvest your field, meaning when is the obligation of Peah kicking? It's very important. When is there an obligation of Peah? Only when you begin to harvest. It's actually very important. There is no obligation of payah prior to harvest. Once I begin to harvest, that's when there's an obligation of payah. Therefore, I will say, at the time when I began to harvest, if I had some ownership interest in some of those trees, the obligation of payah devolves upon me, even if I subsequently sell some of those trees, because the obligation of payah kicks in at the moment the harvest begins. Elahacha, but this is not true by Reishis Hageiz. This is an amazing halacha. When does the obligation of Reishis Hageiz kick in? It's actually very interesting. When does the obligation of Reishis Hageiz kick in? We'll say when? It's actually, interestingly enough, it's only ex post facto. Right? It's only when you accumulate enough wool to satisfy, right, five sheep, five slaim of wool. It's only afterwards, once you have that accumulation of wool, once I have it, now I'm obligated to give it. But it's not the pshat that when I start shearing the sheep, I'm obligated in Reishis Hageiz. What's the proof to that? The proof to that is if I never reach the threshold, what's the halacha? I'm not chayiv. I only become chayiv once I have that amount of wool in my possession. So therefore again, halacha lemaisa, even if the owner of the flock began to shear his sheep, and then he sells off sheep to me, ultimately, again, it's not the same as payah. Ela amarava haytanahu. This tan amarlo machar libnei me'eha shalpara. So I said, rather, who's the tana of this Mishnah of Reishis Hageiz? It's the same tana we had before. If a person goes over to the butcher and he says, sell to me the insides of the cow, V'hayavahen matonos. And inside of the kishkas, obviously, was what? The zroad, l'chayayim, and the keva. Nostan, the coin. So ultimately, again, we give it to the coin. Ve'ein menach elo menat damim. But the purchaser does not have the right to detract any money from the purchase price. Why? Because it was understood, ultimately, again, that those matnos kunu were not included in the sale to begin with. Have a lokach made of mishkal, but if halacha l'maisa, I bought the weight of the meat, then what? Nostan la coin, I give it to the coin, umenake lo es hadamim. And indeed, I do detract from the purchase price. Let's say, what do you see from here? Alma matnos the coin lo mazvin inish. So we'll say, what do you see from here? That when selling something, the matnos kahuna are not part of the sale. So to over here, hachanami matnos the coin lo mazvin inish. So to Rabbi say, what is the halacha over here? That the matanos of the coin ultimately, again, are not included in the sale. And therefore, halacha lemaisa hilchach shir hamocher. Mocher chayiv. So therefore, we'll say what we're seeing over here is this is part of a general motif, which is that when you know that what it is that you have has matnos kuna included, the matnos kuna are not included in the sale. Therefore, we'll say, here's the important qualifying factor. Hilchach shir hamocher mocher chayiv. Therefore, we'll say if I'm selling sheep to Reuven, I'm selling my flock, but I retain some of the sheep for myself. What's the halacha? Mocher chayiv. Ultimately, the seller will be chayiv. Why? Do amar leilokeach matana the kohen gabachi. Because ultimately, the purchaser has every right to tell the seller, the matnos kuna were by you. You're the original owner of the flock. The matnos kuna are by you. If you're still retaining some of the flock, the shearings that go to the kohen are with you. Lo shear loke, lo shear. But if on the other hand, again, the seller did not retain anything for himself, then what? Lokeach chayiv. Then ultimately, halacha lemaisa, the purchaser will be chayiv in reishas hageiz. The amrale mocher matana the coin lo zavnilach. Ultimately, again, because the mocher, the amr, excuse me, I'm sorry. Lo shir lokeach chayiv. The amrale mocher matana the coin lo zavnilach. Ultimately, again, he will say that halacha lemaisa. Again, literally, the matnos kuna are not sold to you, but which means is if you go and you take possession of the flock in its entirety. You had obviously the matnos kuna are not something I could sell to you. It's an obligation that was transferred with the flock, and therefore halacha lemaisa, you are obligated to go ahead and give it to the coin. So therefore, essentially, there's an understanding that everyone is obligated in the matnos kuna. So halacha lemaisa, pretty much, it's whoever owns the property will be obligated in the matnos kuna. When the seller of the sheep retains some of the sheep for himself, it's understood that the obligation of matnos kuna remain with him. If he sells the flock in its entirety, so obviously that obligation of matnos kuna will transfer over to the lokeach. Hadrun aloch reishis hagiz. It will say mazel tov. So baruch Hashem, we now begin the last parak of Maseches Chulin. It will say incredibly, incredibly exciting, right? We finish, I think, when on Thursday. So even if the previous prakim were not as stark as you would like to be, everything goes, right? The success of any life initiative is fundamentally dependent on how you finish it off. So here we go. We'll say last paragraph. So we'll say here we go. Shiluach hakein, noeg ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. So we'll say the obligation to send away the mother bird. So remember again, this is what we're going to get into this mitzvah, obviously. But this is if I want to go ahead and I come across a bird, I want the eggs or the chicks. So what is the halacha? I'm obligated to send away the mother bird before taking the eggs or the chicks. So we'll say, so now the Gemara says, no egg baharetz b'chutz la'aretz. We'll say this mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael and in chutz la'aretz. B'fnei habayis shel b'fnei habayis, in the presence of the Beis Hamikdash, not in the presence of the Beis Hamikdash, b'chulin, it applies to unconsecrated animals. Aval lo b'mukdashin. But we'll say ultimately again. Now we'll say again. I want to say. Remember, we'll say there's a couple of lot. This make this your parak. Make this your parak. Even if the other prakim in chulin, you don't feel like you are kona it. This is a beautiful parak. There's even going to be a little bit of lagadata. Make it yours. Own this parak. Commit these details to your memory. B'chulin levalom mukdashin. It applies ultimately again to unconsecrated animals, but not to mukdash, not to consecrated animals. Chomer b'kisei adam mishiluach hakein. There is a chumra that kisei adam, remember again, covering of the blood, has over shiluach hakein. What's the chumra? Shekisei adam noig b'chaya b'ov. So we'll say kisei adam applies to chayas, not domesticated animals, and to birds. B'mezuman b'she'inu mezuman. We're going to define this concept. Mezuman means literally, we're going to see, it means animals held in captivity. Animals, mezuman means literally prepared. Prepared, right? So remember again, Sekis Adam refers to whether or not you have the chaya in a pen or you capture the chaya or the oaf in the wild. The Shein Muzuman, the Shiluach HaKain, but sending away the mother bird, Eino Noeg, Ela Ba'of. So Shiluach HaKain only applies to birds, does not apply to chayas. The Eino Noeg, Ela B'Shein Muzuman. Rabbi said this is actually incredibly important. And it only applies to animals which are not prepared. I'll just give you the simple illustration of this. If you have a bird, you have a pet bird, right? You have a pet bird, and what happens? That bird lays eggs. You want the eggs. There is no mitzvah of shiluach hakein. There is no mitzvah to send away the mother bird in your pet bird. What can you do? You can reach into the nest and grab the eggs themselves. The mitzvah of shiluach hakein is only by a bird which is not mezuman, a bird which is ownerless. So we'll say this is actually very important because sometimes when cases of shiluach hakein come up, it's very often in a nest that is, last year, this was incredible, I think I mentioned this, I had the opportunity to do the mitzvah of shiluach hakein 5 times. Literally again, in the last 2 years, and the mitzvah of shiluach hakein like 7-8 times, in all of my years, right? Right? Prior to that, maybe I did it like one or two. I don't know. It was much like I felt like I hit the jackpot. I was like a spiritual Powerball winner. Right? Let's say so many times. But interestingly enough, they were all cases of nests in people's homes, not inside someone's home, but, outside of someone's home. Because it's actually halachically, the first step in shiluach hakein in that type of situation is the owner has to make the nest Hefker, right? Because at the end of the day, technically speaking, a bird's nest, that's in the gutter of your home or by the awning of your home, ultimately, again, is your nest. You own that. You own that. It's Kinyan Chatzer. You own that. Those are yours. Salach alamais, you have to make it Hefker first. That's what it means. It only applies by She'ino Mezuman. It only applies to something that is quote-unquote not prepared, which means Hefker, ownerless. Ezu She'ino Mezuman, so we'll say it's for an example. What's an example, ultimately, again, of Eino Mezuman? Kigon, Avzin v'tarnagolim shekananu b'pardes. So the example would be Avzin are geese, tarnagolim are chickens, shekananu b'pardes. Rashi says, shemardu. It's interesting, they rebelled. V'yatzum in abayis, they left the house, v'einan chozros lebayis. They're not coming back home. V'yatzum mitbarios, right, they live in the midbar, upardes lab mezuman. And anything else, essentially, we'll say animals, they now make their home. They make their home in the wild, quote unquote. Right? What's the definition of the wild? Anywhere that is outside of my house. Halacha l'mais, again, those are not prepared. Shekanu b'pardes. Aval im kananu b'bayis. But I will say, if I have birds that have made themselves at home in my home, right? So I will say those are ultimately mezuman, and therefore the mitzvah of shiluach hakein does not apply to these birds. B'chein yone hardesio. So I will say Herodian pigeons, Herodian yonim. Pater mishiluach. Ultimately, again, there is no mitzvah of shiluach. Rashi says, v'chein yoni hadresios shadarkam ligadol im b'nei adam. So apparently, again, Herodian pigeons or Herodian doves were apparently domesticated birds, which would often go ahead and live in the house, so to speak, or really it means live in captivity. The mitzvah shiluach hakein does not apply to these animals. Of tome, a non-kosher bird, pater mila shaleach. We'll say very important halacha. The obligation of shiluach hakein, as we're going to see, only applies to kosher birds because the idea is one of consumption of the eggs. Therefore, again, it's only if the eggs, the mother is kosher, that is mitzvah shiluach hakein. Ov tame, listen to this case. Ov tame rovetz al beitze oftar. What happens if you have a non-kosher egg? That is, I think the word is roosting, right? Sitting on top of kosher eggs, right? A non-kosher bird that is sitting on top of kosher eggs. What's talacha? Or betar robis abeitze of tame. Or for that matter, you have a kosher bird that is nesting or roosting on top of non-kosher eggs. Pater mila shaleach. There's no shiluach hakein, I will say, in that case. Whereas the mitzvah of shiluach hakein only applies kosher mother on kosher eggs. Kore zocher. both said, now there is this bird called the Korash. He says, Kora is of Tame. So this is, we'll discuss this in the Gemara. So this is some type of non-kosher bird. Vedarko lirbots al beitzei achirim. So we'll see, interestingly enough, this non-kosher bird often will roost on the eggs of other birds. So Kora zocher. So we'll say there's two issues over here. Number one, it's a non-kosher bird. Number two, it's a male. So both of these issues are going to come up in the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer Mechai, Rabbi Eliezer says that Shechai v'nshiluach hakein, v'chachamim potrin. And the Chachamim say ultimately again that you are potrin. Good, we'll see what that means in the Gemara. Here we go. Rabbi Avin Rab Maisha. So Rabbi Avin Rab Maisha will say, Chadomer, kol heicha disnan ba'aretzu b'chutzlar. So we'll say, what the Gemara now is picking up is something very interesting. In the last number of Prakim, if you've noticed again, the Mishnayis have all followed the same type of pattern. Talks about a mitzvah, and then tells me what. The mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael, and in Chutz Laretz. Then it goes, b'fnei abayis, shel b'fnei abayis. So what the Gemara points out is as follows. Kol eicha d'slan b'aretz b'chutz laretz, shelo b'tzarach. I'm going to say the truth is, in the last couple of prakim, when the Mishnayis have said that the mitzvah applies in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz, that statement was really meaningless, or I should say unnecessary. Why Rabbi say? Because in the last couple of prakim, we were talking about mitzvos gufios, right? You were talking about mitzvos that apply to the individual. We'll say, in general, the only time we make a distinction between mitzvos, regarding mitzvos, between Eretz and Chutz Laretz is when? Generally, agricultural mitzvos, right? What we call mitzvos hatuluyos ba'aretz. But any mitzvos that apply to the individual, they generally apply in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz. So yet, all the mitzvos that we were speaking about in the last couple of prakim, we'll say none of them were agricultural mitzvos. As such, the Gemara says that both of these opinions agree that statement, the Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz, was not really necessary. Levad mereshes hageis. The only exception to this was reshes hageis, the first shearings. La fugi medrabi iloi. And the Mishnah mentioned Chutz Laretz and Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz, to exclude the opinion of Rabbi Eloi. The Amar, Reishes Hageiz, Eino Noig, El Avaris. Because remember again, also Rabbi Eloi, interestingly enough, who we saw, we paskin like Rabbi Eloi. Shulchan Aruch paskin is like Rabbi Eloi. Rabbi Eloi is of the opinion that Reishes Hageiz only applies in Eretz Yisrael, does not apply in Chutz Laretz. The Chad Amar, Kol Heicha Distan Bifnei Abayis, Shol Bifnei Abayis, Shol Tzorach. The other opinion said, the truth is, the Mishnayis really didn't need to include the statement that the previous mitzvos expressed apply when there is a Beis HaMikdash, and there's when there's not a Beis HaMikdash, levad ne oso v'yespino. With the exception of oso v'yespino, why do I need to say that oso v'yespino applies when there is a Beis HaMikdash, and not a Beis HaMikdash? Watch this, that should be very interesting. Sound like that, because I would have thought, hoylo binyana dekachim ksiv, we'll say when it comes to oso v'yespino, the obligation is stated, ultimately, again, in the context of kachim. Bizman te'ika kachim ninhog, Bizman deleka kachim lo ninhog. I would have thought, therefore, because oso v'yespino is mentioned in the same context, ultimately as what? As kachim, as sacrificial items. I would have thought, when does oso v'yespino apply? Only when there's kachim. When is there kachim, Rabbi Osai? When is there kachim? When is a Beis HaMikdash? If there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no kachim. And therefore, again, I would have thought that maybe the obligation of oso v'yespino also doesn't apply. Kamashon that oso v'yespino applies even when there is no Beis HaMikdash. Vitarbayo Amri, and both of them explain, Kolecha Dislan Bechulim Mugdashan and Sorech, and both of them agree that the statements that ultimately again applied these stated obligations, both to Chulim and Mugdashan, are that's necessary, with the exception ultimately again, Levad Migid Hanosha. I both say, except when the Gemara spoke, or in the Mishnah spoke about Gid Hanosha, it was not necessary to say that Gid Hanosha applies to Chulim and Mugdashan. Pshita! It's obvious that the prohibition of Gid Hanosha applies to both Chulin and Hektish. After all, Mishum de'ikdish pakele iser Gid Hanosha minei. So ultimately, again, would you think that just because something becomes Hektish, now suddenly there's not going to be an obligation of Gid Hanosha? Of course not. My time, O Kimna, la Mishum de'kashu. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, v'lavu Kimna, bivlados kachim. They will say, remember again, but how do we set up that context? No, remember again, we spoke about the Chiddush as long as Rabbi was saying, that when you have a carbon that has offspring, when you have a sacrificial animal that gives birth, the Gemara is telling us that the prohibition of Gid Hanosha applies to that animal as well. What's the Havamina? Remember we had this. The Havamina was that since the sacrificial sanctity of the animal devolves upon the animal prior to the prohibition of Gid Hanosha, I would have thought that maybe Git HaNosha doesn't apply. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah teaches us that Bein Bechulin, Bein Mukdashin, whether an animal ultimately, even if an animal was born to a carbonic animal, and therefore the sacrificial sanctity devolved upon the animal before the prohibition of Git HaNosha, the prohibition of Git HaNosha still sets in. Umay Taimu Kimna, Lab Mishum Dekashilon. But the only reason the Gemara says that you needed to bring up that case of Lodos Kachim is because the Mishnah said that the prohibition of Git HaNosha applies Bein Bechulin Bein Mukdashin. Lo Listnei Me'ikara, Nami Lo Tik Shilach. So ultimately, again, I have a better idea. Don't mention that Git HaNosha applies to Chulin and Mukdashin, and you won't have to come up with that case of Lodos Mukdashin. In other words, you're creating the need to come up with this extra case of Lados Mukdashin because you stated in the Mishnah that the prohibition of Gid HaNosha applies to Chulin and Mukdashin. Don't make this statement and you won't need the case. I did the Tani Letzorech, the Tana Namisha Letzorech, to which the Gemara says, once we mention it Letzorech, in other words, once I had to mention ultimately again Chulin and Kodshim for necessary purposes, ultimately, again, I mentioned it, ultimately, even Shlotzorach by Gid HaNosha. What the Gemara answers is that ultimately, again, it was to maintain some level of Mishnaic symmetry. Beautiful. We'll just do one more line, then we'll stop. It's hard to stop. Remember again, what did the Mishnah say? That ultimately, the obligation of Shiluach HaKein applies to both Chulin and Mukdashin. Right? Shiluach HaKein applies only to Chulin, not to Mukdashin. Says the Gemara, Amaylo, why doesn't it apply to Mukdashin? The Amakra, Shaleach Tishalach Es Ha'im. Send away the mother. B'mi Sha'ata Mitzuvah L'Sholcho. So the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein only applies to someone you could send away. Yotzezeh Shi'ata Mitzuvah L'Sholcho. Ela La'avio Lidei Gizbar. So we'll say, so this is very logical, right? When does the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein apply? Only to a bird that you have the ability to send away. What doesn't it apply to? A bird that you're obligated to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, again, if the bird is consecrated, and there is an obligation not only not to send it away, but to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, then of course the obligation ultimately of Shiluach HaKein will not apply. Alright, so we'll stop over here for today. Shkoyach. If anyone needs to do Mechiras Chametz, the forms are right here. I'm going to be here literally in 2 minutes.